From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Well, the long-awaited New York presidential primary is over, and although you wouldn't know it from the corporate media's coronation coverage, there were some surprises, including the discovery of a massive purge of Democratic voters in Brooklyn. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton, the former senator from New York, also the former First Lady and former Secretary of State, outpolled the Brooklyn-born and raised senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders. Clinton scored 57.9% of the vote to Sanders' 42.1%, with Sanders performing better than then-candidate Barack Obama in 2008, who lost to Clinton 57.4% to 40.32%. Statewide, Sanders actually won more than two-thirds of the state's 62 counties, 49 to 13. For Clinton, it was New York City and its suburbs that delivered the winning margin. She topped the Vermont senator in New York City's five counties and Nassau, Suffolk, Westchester, Rockland, and Orange, along with three upstate counties, Erie, Monroe, and Onondaga. Sanders had set his hopes on a high turnout. However, statewide, only 34% of New York's 5.3 million Democrats took part in the primary. The roughly 1.79 million Democratic voter turnout was slightly less than the 1.86 million that took part in the 2008 election. Sanders moved Tuesday to Pennsylvania, which has its primary set for next Tuesday. Speaking to another massive crowd, he pointed out several problems with New York's voting process, including the fact that the state's closed primary system locked out more than 3 million voters enrolled as independents, and that there was a massive purge of Democratic voters, more than 140,000 in Brooklyn alone. He also predicted a few hours before polls closed in the Empire State that his campaign would do just fine.
One of the themes of this campaign in Pennsylvania and every state that we have been to is the need to reinvigorate American democracy. Right now in America, we have one of the lowest voter turnout rates of any major country on earth. And I want us to change that. I want to see more of our people actively involved in the political process, regardless of their views.
The delegate count from New York stood at 135 for Clinton to 104 for Sanders. Clinton's total pledged delegate count now stands at 1442 to Sanders' 1193. For the Republicans, New York native Donald Trump trounced rivals Ohio Governor John Kasich and Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, garnering 60.5% of the vote and 89 of the 92 available delegates. He won 61 of New York's 62 counties, with New York County, the borough of Manhattan, going for the Ohio governor. Cruz, who came in third with 14.5% of the vote to Kasich's 25.1%, walked away from New York empty-handed. After the closing of polls Tuesday in New York, we decided it was time for an updated conversation with Professor Anthony Montero, who's based in Philadelphia. The attention of the candidates is now turning to Pennsylvania and other states that are coming up next in the primary series. Professor Montero spoke with us from Philadelphia via Skype Wednesday morning. So, an interesting contest in New York on Tuesday. What's your takeaway?
Well, Clinton won. They did what they had to do. The Democratic Party, of course, in New York City, is really the political arm of Wall Street, like no other machine in the nation. And the Clinton machine is the this is the most powerful political machine in the nation, and separate or individual political machine in the nation. And New York is their base. They went all out, and of course, voter suppression, and you know, like your report pointed out, something over 100,000 people eliminated in Brooklyn alone from the voting rolls, Democrats, and another 3 million who, because they're independents, could not vote, and the most restrictive voting requirements in the nation. I mean, you know, if you're an independent or a Republican and you wanted to change your registration, you would have had to do it in October. So, but he didn't do as bad as many people had predicted. He did better against her than Obama did in 2008. But here is the problem in New York City. He barely broke 30% among African Americans. And, you know, there's a lot that concerns me about that. How many of the people who were eliminated in Brooklyn were black? We don't know. What was the black voter turnout? I'm not yet certain. But a movement for progress and for basic change cannot win without the African-American people and the African-American voters. And the African-American voters are being targeted by the Clinton and Wall Street and 1% elements. And, of course, this neo-colonial black misleadership class has something to celebrate in the black vote on Tuesday in New York City.
Only for the moment. I remind you that in 2008, Hillary Clinton trounced Barack Obama in Harlem. And in fact, there were two districts, if memory serves, where Obama got, according to the official count, not a single vote in Harlem.
Well, well, at least that's a comforting news. I would have expected the black vote, and I still expect it in Pennsylvania, certainly in Philadelphia, next week, to do better than what happened in New York yesterday. But yeah. I mean, he has time, and we have time. There's a great deal of confusion, I think, in the black left about this whole process. Many people are now in the black left making the claim that this is a fool's project, that if you're really concerned about change, you would abandon the Democratic Party, which means abandoning tens of millions of people who are involved in this uprising against the establishment. But, you know, I would say this. Even though Hillary won the primary, I think the contradiction between Hillary and the people only gets worse. And the fact of the matter is that she won the primary, but the system is, in every one of these confrontations, losing legitimacy. What they had to do was so over the top that I think the Democratic Party and the two-party duopoly for some time to come, maybe from now on, will not have the confidence or be seen as legitimate by growing numbers, perhaps a majority of younger voters.
You know, coming out of New York in the 2008 election, actually, there was certainly that effect measurable. Because the, again, I remember reading in the media like a day or so after the election that, about these districts in Harlem that had zero votes for Barack Obama, which was just obviously, you know, a rigged outcome, or it's certainly apparently a rigged outcome that had people looking at the legitimacy of it, identifying Clinton with the establishment. And at the time, you'll remember, Obama was running as an insurgent.
Well, at least an insurgent in New York. I mean, in Chicago and Illinois, right, that wasn't the case. I mean,
right,
Obama represented State Street. Clinton represented Wall Street.
Right.
and there are some differences. But you're absolutely right that machine politics in black communities in New York City and other places are alive and well. But New York is particularly draconian and particularly 19th century and early 20th century because, you know, don't forget, New York City gave us the model of machine politics, and they're still working it to a huge effect.
You know, I thought there was something particularly ironic about doing Florida-style purges of the voter rolls in Brooklyn, where, you know, in the political culture, even in the national culture, people think of Brooklyn as a place where dead people vote. And here, they were striking live Democrats from the 144,000 was the last count that I saw in the New York Daily News today. And which is, you know, you had a 350,000 vote difference, no, a 250,000 vote difference between Clinton, who had about 1 million, and Sanders, who had about 750,000 votes. And then on top of that, you know, you've got 1.75 million people voting in the Democratic primary, 3 million independents locked out. Now, that 3 million independents goes against 5 million Democrats, so it's about 60% of the Democratic voting population. There was also independents. They voted in the same proportions, you know, so that you had like 1 over 3 or a third of them voted, and they could possibly have swung the election to Sanders statewide.
Oh, yeah. That's why the question of having won the primary, but the system loses legitimacy every time this happens, especially with young voters and probably with large numbers of independents. But that's why they want Sanders out of the race as soon as possible, because it's obvious going forward these issues get debated and get discussed and get highlighted. Upped and rigged a system. The other side of it is, the longer this goes on, the closer the insurgent movements headed by Trump and the Republican Party and Sanders and the Democratic Party, which represent people way beyond the party and electoral system. But the longer this goes on, the closer the narratives about the corrupt, illegitimate, and rigged system comes together. And Trump and Sanders start saying the same things. I think what the Clinton people want Sanders out of the race for is because they recognize that she becomes the symbol of a system that is losing legitimacy among people. And this only will mean fewer and fewer people even participating in this whole thing. And of course, in a logical sense, it brings us closer to the formation of a labor-based People's Party. I'm very concerned with unions like AFSCME and 1199 and others who supported Clinton, who was supported by the same CEOs and corporate executives that have the Verizon workers out on strike, out on the streets. This is this type of breach of labor solidarity something that we cannot tolerate. The trade union movement, organized labor, nor the working class in general, the poor, the locked, lose because of this type of class collaboration on the part of labor leaders that, you know, are tied into Wall Street and tied into Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I mean, we have on the one hand Glenn Ford's black misleadership class, but we also have the labor misleadership class who are throwing in with Clinton. And it's interesting because you look at the media collaboration with this as well. The presentation across the media today is that, you know, basically it's a coronation of Hillary Clinton, and now it becomes harder to stop Trump, which is pretty remarkable, too, looking at the numbers from yesterday. But Clinton only got 135 to 104 delegates, and she's only at 1442 to Sanders, who's just shy of 1,200. And they need 2,400 or something, whatever it is. They need a lot more. They're only barely halfway there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the delegate count did not change measurably.
Right.
And that's, of course, to Bernie's favor. So we'll see going forward. I mean, it kind of takes a little bit of the wind out of my sails coming here to Pennsylvania and, of course, to Philadelphia, because there's a kind of a virtual lockdown of the media vis-a-vis the black left or those in the black left that support Bernie Sanders. We have all of this media stuff created by the Clinton campaign to show her with black people, especially the parents of some of those who have been killed by police. The other side of it is, I understand that they're bringing in some top former members of the Obama administration who are black to campaign for her. Now, you know, the Democratic Party here in Philadelphia is a majority black party. Now, that's not the same for the rest of the state, but that's the way it is here. So the black vote will be decisive in deciding the outcome of the Pennsylvania primary.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that's interesting to me is the voter suppression in New York. And that is, of course, the obligation of the federal prosecutors to monitor. In New York City, in fact, in the Southern District, there are two areas that are actually inside the jurisdiction of the Voting Rights Act. The person charged with that is the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District and Preet Bharara. There was a primary election two or three years ago up in Newburgh, New York, which is a city that has about a third black, a third brown, a third white population. Very impoverished, maybe the poorest city in the country, certainly the poorest city in the state. And they had a primary election with community candidates running. And the same day that they did it, this happened actually for two primaries in a row, there was a massive gang roundup by federal, state, and local police. They arrested 60, 70 people early in the morning, which, of course, we know, looking at voter suppression, that one of the devices that's used is heightened police activity on Election Day. Well, the U.S. attorney was at a press conference on the second event of this to brag about the, you know, gang roundup, and I asked him a question at the press conference saying, you know, aren't you concerned that conducting this raid on the primary day, when there's a primary election in a city with the composition that Newburgh has, that you are employing a tool of voter suppression and that that's going to be one of the outcomes, particularly given that you should be sensitive to this because you have some areas in your jurisdiction that are subject to the Voting Rights Act? And he said to me, Preet Bharara said on camera, said, I wasn't aware that there was an election today until I got to Newburgh.
Okay.
So you see the level of enforcement that there is for these kinds of violations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a completely, not only rigged, but corrupt system in many respects, where that is set up to protect the insiders and to protect the machine. You know, it's a system that has to be overturned, and the pressure from the Bernie Sanders movement and the Trump movement is for a lot of upon the system, and it's a brittle system. It's a system that can be broken, but it's a long process, and it is a process, and just broken necessarily in its stronghold. They will defend New York as they did, and they'll pull out all stops. But again, they did it in 2008, and this was they had a black candidate who couldn't get a vote in certain black precincts. But I'm still concerned with this overordinate influence in black electoral politics of the machine and of Wall Street and of the corporate media. Now, we don't have an estimate of what organized labor did in terms of what the trade union vote looked like. But I would think that if nothing is as concerning as the black voter performance in New York City.
Yeah, I mean, you're wondering basically whether the labor vote mirrors that because of the dynamics being so similar.
Absolutely.
So on that point, or just generally, you get through this, whatever happens in Pennsylvania happens, whatever happens as you go forward to Cleveland Republican National Convention and Philly Democratic National Convention, either an ongoing process of disillusionment among broader and broader sectors of the voters and working class particularly, and then a post-convention condition, whatever that is, if Sanders comes out, Sanders running against Trump or Kasich or Cruz, that seems much less likely now, or Clinton running against Trump or Cruz or Kasich, there's going to be that, the general election, and then someone taking office next January, and yet the condition of workers, absent some major upheaval politically, is going to be exactly the same, and they're going to be less and not more disaffected.
Yeah.
What should we be doing to prepare the ground?
Well, I think we have to take very seriously the insurgent movements and not say that these are people who are duped by the two-party system. These are people who are in motion in the tens of millions, perhaps, against the two-party duopoly. Now, will all of them leave or refuse to participate if their guy doesn't get the nomination? Perhaps not. But polls that showed that one-third of Bernie supporters would not support Hillary Clinton a month ago, probably after New York, that number has increased. And I think the longer this goes on, the more profound the crisis of legitimacy becomes. And by that, I'm saying that the people reject the institutions and their representatives, the major institutions and their representatives. As you know, the candidates with the highest negatives are Trump, Cruz, and Hillary Clinton. So if it's Trump and Hillary Clinton, you will have, maybe for the first time in recorded history, as they say, two candidates running for the highest office in the country who have the highest negatives of any candidates running for such offices in history. And a lot of the negativity exists among the voters in the two parties. Hillary is highly negative among Democratic Party voters. Trump is very negative among Republican voters. I think this will be a general election where, if not openly, at least in a subtext of the whole thing, will be the question of the legitimacy of the system itself, whether this is a democracy at all. And if it is not, how do we restore or reclaim some modicum of democracy in this country and in the electoral system.
And finally, just for an historical analog, some people, myself included, after the rise and apparent fall of the Occupy movement, looked at it at the beginning, looked at it as the beginning of a process, perhaps like the Petrograd Soviet, which was 1905, 1907, whatever, 10 years or so, 12 years before the actual Russian Revolution. And of course, things, analogs, as they replay later in history, generally things move faster. Could it be that the analogy holds for that, and using it, that perhaps we're looking at electing Kerensky now, no matter who gets elected, and perhaps some major activity coming shortly thereafter?
Well, I think that's a very interesting way of looking at things. I think possibly that's a possibility. However, I think that we're looking at something a little bit more or far more dangerous than that. You see, because the positive thing, let us say hypothetically, of a Clinton-Trump race is that many of the foreign policy and economic questions that affect ordinary working people and the poor will, of course, in a distorted way, but nonetheless, will be on the table because of Trump's opposition to these trade pacts. And if he holds to that going forward, he will have a stick to beat Clinton with and to force her into a corner to have to defend her position on NAFTA and TPP and others. You know, let me put it this way. I think we're looking at something close to an existential crisis of the political system. And they have to shore it up because they cannot govern with these high levels of illegitimacy of the system. If I could make a prediction, no matter what happens in Cleveland and Philadelphia and what happens in November, I think millions of people have committed themselves to activism and to mass movements. And that's the positive thing. I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle. It's out. What's going on in Washington with Democracy Spring and over 1,000 people being arrested down there at the Capitol, what's happening with the Verizon workers' strike, what's happening with the ongoing movements around Black Lives Matter, all of this is something that no one could have predicted even a year ago. So events are developing very quickly. The lines have been drawn in the sand. In the Democratic Party, it is the people versus Hillary Clinton and the 0.1% and the war makers. And that's what we have to keep our eye on. Again, I believe that Clinton is probably the most dangerous major political figure in the world today. And they're doing all they can to keep foreign policy questions off the table, because I think that is where she is very, very vulnerable. And I would hope that Sanders and his people would begin to exploit this area of weakness in the Clinton a career, especially as it relates to wars in the Middle East, wars with Russia, wars with China, nuclear modernization, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.